I'd like to talk about the gravity-dual of Korchinsky theorem. And this is a kind of project where I'd like to use holography to constrain some of the effective quantum gravity theories. And so there are many ways to constrain quantum gravities by using the holographic argument. But in this talk, I'd like to focus on one particular approach based on the gravity-dual of Korchinsky theorem, which says that in the field theory language, every scale invariant field theory, at least in 1 plus 1 dimension, is automatically conformally invariant. And there should be a, if you believe in holography, there should be a corresponding dual statement, a gravity statement of this Korchinsky theorem. It says, basically, if you consider a scale invariant geometries, then they should be automatically conformally invariant. And this gives you some constraint on the possible effective field theories of gravities, because in some cases, as I'll show you later, some bad examples of quantum theory of gravity predict such a geometry that is scale invariant but not conformally invariant. And I'd like to argue that such a bad examples of quantum field theories is inconsistent, because they contradict with the gravity counterpart of Korchinsky's theorem I'd like to discuss. And this talk is based on these two papers, which appeared in the print archive with these numbers. And if you have any questions during my talk, please don't hesitate to ask me at any moment. So the entire talk today is based on the belief in holography. So I'd like to begin with my belief. So In my belief, holography is one of the most fundamental properties of quantum gravity. And this is because by using holography, we can, for example, understand the some mysterious nature of quantum gravities, such as the entropy of a black hole, or say, unitary evolution of Hawking radiation, or black hole systems, and so on and so on. And based on this belief, I think it is a very good strategy to constrain or give a kind of a consistency conditions for the candidates of quantum gravity by using the holographic argument. And so I'd like to assume in this talk the holography is a very important property of quantum gravities. But if you even don't believe in holography, you can see my argument as a kind of a relation between the holography or the A theory statement and the gravity statement. And if you can find any counterexamples of my argument or the discussions, and then you can say that if you can find the counterexamples of my statement from the theoretical viewpoint or in experimental viewpoint, you can see that, well, the holography might be wrong in nature. So here are some objectives of today's talk. So first, I'd like to establish what I mean by the gravity dual of Korchinsky theorem in the language of string theory or M theory, but it can apply also to any quantum gravity theories you like. And you can state whether this Korchinsky theorem is correct or not in any given consistent, well, you claim consistent quantum theory of gravities. And then, after establishing what I mean by Korchinsky theorem here in the gravity language, then I'd like to discuss how I can use this gravitational counterpart of Korchinsky theorem to give a consistency conditions or constraints on the possible quantum gravity by using the holographic argument. And then I'd like to show you several examples where something goes wrong. I'd like to show you several bad examples. Here I wrote there's two examples, and which is inconsistent with gravity dual of Korchinsky theorem. And in my viewpoint, these theories should be discarded as a candidate of quantum gravities because they are inconsistent in terms of holography. So these examples include a spontaneous violation of Lorentz symmetry based on the vector condensation, and also what is called ghost condensation lie in this category of bad examples of string landscape, or maybe I should call it swampland, and where these theories predict scale invariant but not conformal geometries of unit configurations, and these should be inconsistent from the holographic viewpoint, because the dual K theories must be scale invariant but non-conformal, and that is forbidden by Polchinski theorem. Okay, so the main argument is not so complicated, so I can summarize my discussion in this one slide. From the field theory viewpoint, Joe Polchinski wrote a paper more than 20 years ago, and in that paper, I'd like to review the contents momentarily. He said that a scale invariant field theories, at least in 1 plus 1 dimension, is automatically conformally invariant under some assumptions. And I'd like to come back to these assumptions, but such assumptions include unitarity, Poincaré invariance, and so on and so on. But under these null assumptions in the field theory, then it is proven that the scale invariant field theory is conformally invariant. I also discussed what is the distinction between scale invariance and conformally invariance, because people always, some people say that these two notions should be automatically the same, but I'd like to come back to the distinction between these two, and then I'd like to show this Polchinski theorem. Even though from the symmetry argument, the scale invariance and conformal invariance are different, these should be automatically the same, at least in 1 plus 1 dimension. And then I'd like to argue today the gravity counterpart of this statement. And the statement here is again pretty simple. If you consider a scale invariant field configurations in the supergravity, whatever, in your candidate quantum theory of gravity, then such configurations should be automatically conformally invariant. I should say what I mean by scale invariant field configuration is that in addition to the usual Poincaré invariance, then these such geometries should contain additional isometries that corresponds to the scaling invariance and whose commutation relations or killing commutation relations or killing vectors should satisfy the commutation relations of scale invariant Poincaré invariant field theories. And then what I mean here is that conformal invariant geometry is that it should contain the full LDS isometries. So the number of isometries should be automatically enlarged if you consider the Poincaré invariance and scale invariant geometries. And this is my statement. And I'd like to give you some evidence of this statement in the supergravity approximations. And then I'd like to show you examples where this gravity counterpart of theorem is violated. And then I'd like to argue such examples are quite bad from the viewpoint of holography, because it is inconsistent with a strict theorem in the field theory study. And from this you can learn, if you can find such examples of scale invariant but non-conformal configurations in the gravity side, one can say that, for example, such theories should be abandoned because this is such theories is inconsistent, or you can abandon holography. So either viewpoint you can take, but in this viewpoint I'd like to, I believe holography is one of the most important properties, so I don't want to abandon holography, so such theories should be forbidden or abandoned. Okay, so let me first explain what I mean by the gravity dual of Polchinski theorem in more precise language, and I'd like to give you some evidence to support this theorem. So let me begin with a field theory analysis done by Polchinski in 1988, 20 years ago. So as I said several times, he showed scale invariant field theories in 1 plus 1 dimension is conformally invariant. And I'm going to come back to the higher dimensional counterpart or higher dimensional generalization of Polchinski theorem later, but I'd like to first focus on what was shown in 1 plus 1 dimension. And gravity counterpart of this statement should be applied to in 1 plus 2 dimension bulk theories. So he showed that the scale invariant field theory is automatically conformally invariant under the following three assumptions. The first assumption is the theory is unitary, which is reasonable to assume, I think. The second assumption is that the theory is Poincaré invariant. And the third assumption is that the spectrum of the theory is discrete. What I mean by spectrum here is that the spectrum or the scaling dimensions. So the scaling dimension has some discrete value in the theory, which essentially means that you don't have infinite numbers of field. And there are some examples of scale invariant but not conformal field theories if you evaluate one of these assumptions even in 1 plus 1 dimensions. But in this talk, when I like to study the gravity counterpart of this statement, I'd like to assume the same thing in the gravity side. And I believe it is really reasonable to assume that the gravitational theory under consideration has a unitary unitarity, and we explicitly assume that the gravity geometry I'm studying is Poincaré invariant. And I can also assume that the scriptural is of the gravitational theory is discrete by postulating that there are finite numbers of fields appearing in the gravitational Lorentz effective description of the gravity constant. So to appreciate Polchinski's theorem, let me begin with the distinction between the scale invariance and conformal invariance. So scale invariance means that the theory under consideration is invariant under the following scaling transformation. So in the field theory language, this just corresponds to the requirement that the trace of the energy momentum tensor is given by the total derivative or total divergence like this. When the energy momentum tensor is total derivative or total divergence like this, we can always construct a dilatation current that is conserved, which means that the theory is scale invariant. But in order to say the theory is conformally invariant, you need a little bit more. And when I say the theory is conformally invariant, it means that in addition to this scale invariance, you have a theory invariant under the special conformal transformations. And special conformal transformation is generated by this transformation. And the theory under consideration, in particular, the field theory under consideration is invariant under the special conformal transformation when the energy momentum tensor is not only given by the total derivative, but also traceless. Or, in other words, this A mu appearing in the trace of the energy momentum tensor should be a total derivative of something else, like this. When this vector A mu, which is known as virial current in the literature, when virial current is given by total derivative like this, then you can always improve the energy momentum tensor so that it is traceless. And then when the energy momentum tensor is traceless, we can always construct a current associated with these special conformal transformations. And the theory is invariant under the special conformal transformation. Or in other words, theory is conformally invariant, fully conformally invariant.
So this statement is true in any dimension?
Yes, this statement itself is true in any dimension. So from this argument, it is clear that the requirement of special conformal invariance is much, much stronger from this superficial viewpoint, much stronger than the requirement of scale invariance. But what is shown by Polchinski is that at least in a plus one dimension, if you assume scale invariance, then special conformal invariance automatically follows. And this is why the Polchinski theorem is quite non-trivial, and because the symmetry argument doesn't tell you whether the scale invariance should indicate special conformal transformation at all. So what is interesting here is that although the symmetry should be very different, or the symmetry requirement for the special conformal invariance is stronger, then these two notions equivalent under some assumptions. So maybe discuss the Polchinski's proof in the next transparencies, but he can show that this theorem at least well only in one plus one dimensions. And it is not so clear why this theorem should be only true in one plus one dimension, because as I'd like to claim later, there is no counterexamples unknown in higher dimension as well. So, well, in a personal viewpoint, I strongly believe that this equivalence between the two, the scaling invariance and Hofmann invariance, should be also true in higher dimensions under some assumptions. And I'd like to give you some evidence for this from the gravity viewpoint later. But what is known in field theory is that this equivalence is shown only shown in two dimensions or one plus one dimension. And the trick here is that one plus one dimension, the tensor structure of the energy modulating tensor is so simple. And also, we can use the argument of the C theorem, which is true in one plus one dimension.
So, are the general conformal transformations of one plus one dimension playing any role here?
You mean, in addition to this infinitesimal conformal transformation, you can consider infinite dimensional Virasoro symmetries. But in this argument, this infinite conserved Virasoro currents does play any role.
You don't need that for the C theorem.
Yeah, you don't need any such arguments to prove C theorem. So
you don't think it has anything to do with that?
In a superficially, I don't see any need to introduce such infinity.
And does the theory this theorem doesn't say anything about whether a one plus one dimensional theory with special conformal that's specially conformal is generally conformal. It just says if it's scale invariant, it's special conformal. Is that right?
Yes, this theorem itself doesn't say anything about whether you can extend this special conformal invariance to the general conformal invariance. But usually it is assumed
Broader of the algebra when you generate.
Oh, yeah, you can always generalize the algebra from this conformal algebra, special conformal algebra to the infinite dimension Virasoro algebra. But it is not so clear whether this should be also.
What happens when you think of it? You said that it's special conformal?
Is any theory that's specially conformal generally conformal? And does this theorem have anything to say about that? And I heard the answer no.
At least the theorem doesn't say anything about it.
Right.
You may be able to show that. Or
right. But not as far as you know.
Yes. I don't know any formal proof of that statement. But well, again, people usually assume or believe in this statement. So maybe there is a way to show it.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, so let me give you the proof by Polchinski in this one slide. Well, actually, it's not complete proof, but a sketch of the proof, but anyway. So he introduced, well, in two dimensions, there are only two independent components of an energy modulating tensor, the ZZ component and the trace. So I'd like to denote T by ZZ component and theta by the trace. And conservation of energy modulating tensor gives you one relation, differential equations between this T and theta. And there are three independent two-point functions among these energy modulating tensors, and denoted by F and G and H. And actually, almost the main part of the proof of Polchinski theorem was given by Zavodotskov. So I'd like to follow the Zavodotskov trick here. And Zavodotskov introduced the following particular combination of F and G and H, given by this. And he studied the linearization group properties of this C function. So he studied the response of this C function with respect to the scale transformation or the distance between these two points we are considering in the two-point functions. And then he showed by just using these conservation relations, the response of C is given by some third order times H. And from this definition, if you assume the unitarity of the theory, If h is given by two point functions of the same operator theta, so this should be positive definite, which means that the response of C with respect to the scaling transformation should be negative or semi-negative definite. And this means that if you regard this C as a C function in the C theorem, and C should be automatically a decreasing function with respect to the scaling transformation. And this gives you the proof of the C theorem in Laplacian dimensions. And furthermore, this equation gives you the proof of Korchinski theorem, because at fixed point, then this C function, given by the combination of the two-point functions of energy moment tensor, should vanish. In other words, this should have a canonical scaling dimension and a scaling invariant fixed point. So this equation tells you that at a fixed point, this h must vanish. And this means that a two-point function among these traces of energy moment tensor should vanish at a scaling invariant fixed point. And this is only true if you assume unitarity and the discreteness of the spectrum, the operator theta itself vanishes. And this gives you the proof of Korchinski theorem because, as I said, the condition for the theory to be conformally invariant is that the trace of the energy moment tensor should vanish, and this is desired conditions. So in this way, in Laplace one dimension, you can show that Korchinski theorem is given by is true. And at the same time, you learn that from this argument, there is some deep relation between the C theorem and Korchinski theorem, at least in one plus one dimension.
So, yes. When did you call this a sketch of a proof and not a proof? So, are there any subtle things that you didn't say?
Okay, yeah, well, you have to be more careful because. So, for example, you have to.
You said this, as long as you can unitarity and discreteness perspective.
Oh, this for, well, also there is some subtleties associated with this argument. At fixed point, I assume that C should have the canonical dimensions. But there is some operator mixing between this, define this and the other operators that could appear in the correlation functions, and that gives you some logarithmic running and so on and so on. But most of the proof here is, well.
But isn't once you said that the fixed point, all the operators must have
canonical dimensions.
Right. So pretty much by definition what we mean by fixed point.
Well, if you define the operator in a correct way.
I guess you're saying presumably what could happen is as you approach the fixed point, there could be some relevant operators that might accidentally drive you.
Contribute to this, well, to this definition of C or something like that. Then, you're right.
Okay.
And but yeah, Korchinski studied it more carefully, and then he showed that it could not have, if you assume the discreteness of spectra.
So coming back to his question,
yes.
So the question was whether special conformal invariance implies general.
Yeah, so
the statement is that special conformal invariance and scaling invariance are equivalent in one plus one dimension. And in that case, the stress tensor is traceless, and that means that TZZ is holomorphic. Right?
Yes, yes.
And then by multiplying it with an arbitrary homomorphic function, you can construct infinitely many currents, and these are the generators of infinitely dimensional. Conformal algebra, right? So it seems to me that always get infinite dimensional conformal algebra, conformal invariance.
Yeah, well, in that sense, at least classically, you can say that you can construct infinitely many currents from this traceless homomorphic Newtonian tensor.
Which is saying even classically, you wouldn't expect there to be special but not generally conformal theories?
And I think that the special conformal invariants should always.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
General conformal invariants.
As pointed out, in at least classically, if you have a traceless energy momentum tensor, and this equation tells you that this T must be holomorphic, and then you can always construct a classical infinitely dimensional conserved currents in 1 plus 1 dimensions, and that should give you at least classically a Virasoro. So,
where is the class? Where is this classical?
In that case, I'm not sure how to general, how to.
In the quantum case, what's the problem?
Well, I'd be just, I'd like to be on the safer side.
Okay.
So, I don't see any obstacle here, but yeah. Okay, so let me show you what I mean by the graphic counterpart of this program. And the claim here is that scale invariant geometry should be conformal invariant, which means that it should have ADS isometries. And I'd like to formulate this in terms of string theory or M theory compactifications. So let me, well, for definiteness, let me begin with M theory action like this. So M theory supergravity Lagrangian has this following form. And I can repeat the following discussion also in the string theory, but for definiteness, I'd like to focus on the M theory compactifications. I'd like to compactify with M theory down to 2 plus 1 dimensions to discuss the gravity counterpart of Polchinski here. And the conjecture here is that we can if you consider the most general scale invariant field configurations of these geometries, then such geometries should be automatically conformal invariant, or it should have ADS isometries. So here is the most general scale invariant field configurations in 11 dimensional supergravities. So this is a couple of deformations of ADS field compactifications, and I have arbitrary and dimensional internal space. And but the work factor appearing here can depend on the internal coordinate, and in particular, the work factor here can be different from that. And you may also introduce some Kurtz-Kram vector coupling. And also, you can introduce Foucault flux, and the most general ansatz for the scale invariant field configurations are given like this. So, A and B and C and D are some forms in the internal space. And this geometry is invariant under the following scaling transformations. And I'm using the Poincaré coordinate because in the Polchinski theorem, Poincaré invariance is assumed, so it is easier or it is important to define this statement in the Poincaré coordinate.
So in principle, A, B, C, and D can depend on each one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I assume that ABCD only depends on the internal space. So what I mean is that ABCD are forms on the internal space. And the claim here is that if you assume these geometries and impose some equation motions, and then this should be, well, if the Polchinski theorem is true in the gravitational sense, then this should give you the condition that F should equal to G, and H and B and C must vanish, so that the theory is not only invariant under this scaling transformation, but also invariant under the special conformal transformation theorem like this. And I'd like to show some evidence for this conjecture in the supergravity approximations. But this conjecture itself should be valid even after you introduce higher derivative corrections, because otherwise the Polchinski theorem is violated by the higher derivative or higher derivative corrections or some N effect or other prime corrections or root coupling effect. But this can't happen from the field theory viewpoint. So okay, so let me first show what happens if you impose the equation motion here. And for technical reason, I'd like to first impose the following gauge conditions for the Kurtz-Kram vectors. And under this assumption of the gauge conditions, And then you can first compute the following combination of the Rich tensor of the general background like this. And usually it's very the right hand the Rich tensor of this most general scaling line configurations is pretty complicated. But you can take these particular combinations, and then it can be shown that the right hand side of this combination is a total derivative. And this combination is very motivating because this is nothing but what appears in the null energy conditions of the super of the Einstein gravity or the supergravity in the dimensions. So the null energy condition says that the left hand side should be a positive definite. And at the same time, the right hand side is totally derivative. So you can of the internal space. So you can integrate these equations over the internal space. And the right hand side must vanish because it is integrated over the internal space. And so should be the left hand side. And this tells you that the null energy condition gives you that the left hand side must be positive definite. And indeed, it is given by the flux bilinears, B squared plus C squared. And because right hand side should vanish, and B and C should vanish like this. And then you can again use the Einstein equations to conclude that F and G is equal. And then in this way, under these gauge conditions, we can show that this 11 dimensional supergravity with this ansatz is automatically conformally invariant at the same time. Because this and B and C should vanish, and F and G should coincide. And the question is, what happens if you introduce more non-trivial H here? So I assume the gauge condition here. And if you introduce non-trivial H here, the right-hand side, well, you can still compute the non-energy the combination of the Rich tensor appearing in non-energy conditions. And then the right-hand side is something like this. So still you have a total derivative term, but in addition, you have some combination of H here. And you cannot go any further at this point because the null energy condition gives you the positive definite contribution in the left-hand side, and this total derivative can be neglected after the integration over the internal space. But these two pieces give you additional positive definite contributions on the right-hand side. So one may wonder, you can compensate the left-hand side by these right-hand side contributions. But this, well, I believe that this cannot happen in 11-dimensional compactification because from the lower effective field theory viewpoint, the right-hand side, this additional H piece, gives you the violation of that energy condition in the lower effective dimensionally reduced field theories. But technically, at this point, I don't know how to derive or how to make precise this argument, but so most probably, equation of motion of flux and other components of Einstein equations should make this right-hand side contribution trivial or vanish, and that I need some more trick.
Why are you assuming the null energy condition here? Aren't there field theories that violate that?
No.
Like a conformally coupled scalar?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And other forms of non-minimal coupling, then, too.
Okay, so first of all, in 11-dimensional supergravity or 10-dimensional string theories, now energy condition is not valid.
Oh, I believe that, but didn't you say you're adding it to terms now of a general nature? Wasn't that what these H's were?
Okay, so yeah, non-trivial H will induce a kind of effective violation of null energy condition if you just look at the dimensionally reduced, for example, in this case, 3-dimensional gravity theory. And yeah, first of all, in order for this Polzinski theorem to be true, it is highly suggested that null energy condition is not violated from the 3D viewpoint. Also, the C theorem is in from the holographic viewpoint is based on the null energy conditions. So,
I guess you can show that upon closer climb reduction, at least in supergravity approximations, the null energy conditions preserved. if you so if you start really in some series, string series with the gravity,
yeah,
then that can be sure.
Right. Well, I was agreeing if you start with supergravity. Maybe I'm confused because wasn't he adding extra terms?
I don't know. My question was why did you have so I thought H is a
vector.
It's a vector set.
Right.
And then you said that there is a gate choice. You could make a gate choice.
This is an extra assumption I introduced to show this proof.
Right, but so my question is that you can always choose a gauge, right? So then you are saying that
in this case,
uses, under which condition you cannot do that. Right? So you make I guess you are saying that so that's really a restriction on the possible.
This is a restriction on the possible.
Right, yeah, it might not be in general. But on the other hand, you know, you have, the number of counting, you should always be able to do that.
Well,
I mean, it also can be a question of...
the possible case transformation, general if your morphism you can use is restricted because you have to at least preserve the scaling transformations.
Oh, but I'm just doing diffeomorphism on the 8 space, right?
Or space.
On an internal space. So which means so I have 8 coordinates, and so in principle, I should at least naively I have 8 possible diffeomorphisms, so I can choose them in a way where I can put each.
Well, essentially, this condition is equivalent to the condition that this field strength vanish.
Yeah, I guess the way you presented it this way might suggest that there are obstructions to always choosing the gauge.
Right.
The different morphism gauge.
I said there is an obstruction.
Right. Because, okay.
This is related to FIJ in this field space, in the internal space.
Which would be interesting to understand because naively you need careful analysis. As you said, maybe it's again just using Einstein equations that's guaranteed to be.
So I
believe that much more, which would be maybe easier to show if you can prove that you can always choose a different morphism when you can put H in that form.
Yes.
Because the equations of motions are invariant under diffeomorphism transformations. I mean, or whatever. And so you showed that in a particular diffeomorphism frame,
that's
a trivial statement. Now, if you are saying that, then there must be a diffeomorphism change that you like, so that's an equivalent statement.
I'd like to use other equations of motions to give you some other constraint on this.
Or at least, I mean, if that is true, then what you said must be true as well. That's only all of otherwise.
Anyway, so let me go. Well, this is all I can say in this supergravity approximation. But then I'd like to give you some comments, and then I'd like to move to some bad examples. So first of all, you can say the similar things in the string theory too. And then, any gravitational theories, whether non-energy condition or weak energy condition is applied. And the proof itself doesn't depend on the dimensionality of the compact space. I can repeat the same analysis not only in the three-dimensional compact space, but also in four-dimensional compact space or five-dimensional compact space. And then you can say the same thing. And then, I can generalize the Polzinski theorem in higher dimensions. And I'd like to stress that Polzinski theorem in the field theory side was only proved in Laplacian dimension, but there is no counterexamples. So this gravity counterpart of this discussion, I suggest higher dimensional generalization.
But unlike Polzinski case, it could be in a special, since you're going to make a proof in supergravity approximation.
Yes, again,
it could be in a special, special region. In a parameter space.
That must be true because, as I like to come back to this point later, at the last part of this talk, gravitational shear theorem is also proved by assuming the non-energy condition or weak energy conditions. But C theorem is also violated in higher dimensions, but gravity theorem is shown in any dimension by assuming an energy condition, which means that if you introduce higher dimensional, higher derivative corrections or wave corrections in higher dimensional case, then the C theorem, we know that C theorem must be violated, which means that such a proof should fail.
But we also know that now energy condition is violated beyond supergravity approximation. I mean, that's yes. Instant on instant on correction in fact.
Yes. Okay. So maybe the more mysterious question is why it is, even though the null energy condition is violated, why this is true in 2 plus 1 dimensional compactification. That might be the real question to be interested.
Oh, okay. Now you need to phrase it in 2 plus 1. Yeah, okay.
Well, we can take various viewpoints.
Okay.
So anyway, I'd like to come back to the question of whether there is some bad examples of quantum gravities by studying the probability of. So in this talk, I'd like to show you 2 examples. One is the so-called spontaneous Lorentz symmetry breaking by the vector condensation. And I'd like to also show you the examples based on post condensation. So let me first begin with a spontaneous Lorentz symmetry breaking vector condensation. So the model I'd like to study here is the vector field action given by this, and I'd like to couple these field theories with Einstein's gravity with cosmological constant. So the theory has a vector field A mu, and this A mu has a usual Maxwell kinematic term, F mu mu, F mu mu, and in relation to this Maxwell kinematic term, you are introducing the most generic potential terms given by this vector field bilinears. And this theory doesn't have a gauge invariance, but you can embed this theory in the gauge invariant field theories or the so-called post condensation theories. But anyway, so this theory shows the spontaneous Lorentz symmetry breaking once these are potential terms, so the kind of Galois type, and if the non-trivial minimum of this potential located at the non-trivial condensation of A mu squared. Then the theory naively shows spontaneous Lorentz symmetry breaking, but if you put this system in the ADS space, in particular ADS3 space, then all the equations of motions, including the Einstein's equation, is solved by the area 3 space and the following vector condensations. So, and the point is that even though this vector condensation breaks the ADS isometries, energy momentum tensor is still proportional to G mu nu. So the ADS space is not modified. So the geometry itself has a full conformal invariance, but the vector condensation breaks a conformal invariance down to only the scale invariance. This vector condensation is invariant under the scaling transformation, but not invariant under the conformal transformation. So this is subject to the Polchinski theorem. And as I said, this solution is quite bad because this shows a vector condensation like this, and this vector condensation is scale invariant but not conformal invariant under this scale, under these transformations. So this means that this theory is inconsistent with Polchinski theorem and predict scale invariant but not conformal geometries. And I'd like to argue that such a theory is inconsistent in the, as a effective theories of quantum gravities, because it predicts scale invariant but not conformal field theories that are forbidden in by gravity dual of Polchinski theorem. So at least this theory coupled with Einstein's gravity is inconsistent with holographic interpretations of quantum gravities. So let me show another example. The other example is based on the so-called post-condensation models. So the Lagrangian I'd like to consider is this kind of most general iron derivative Lagrangians, his symmetries invariant under the shift and with the shift symmetry of the ghost field band. And again, if these HN are chosen so that this has a non-trivial compensation of this field derivative, and then it shows the kind of spontaneous growing symmetry breaking and known as the ghost compensation. And again, that is for the tensor, equation of motion for this theory, as well as the Einstein's equation are solved by the ADS3 space and the scalar compensation like this. Again, the point is that the resonant tensor is proportional to G mu nu, so it does not give you any back reactions. And again, such a solution is quite bad because after assuming that ghost field has a shift symmetries, and then this ghost field configuration is invariant under the scale transformation, but this is not invariant under the special conformal transformations. So these ghost field configurations are forbidden in any consistent theory of quantum gravity in plus two dimensions. And in retrospect, we can compare these two theories with the discussion in the first part of this talk. And what is happening here is that all these two examples violate non-energy conditions. So I think that in order to the violation of non-energy condition is directly related to the appearance of the violation of Korchinsky theorem, and at least this violation should be forbidden in plus two dimensional quantum gravity.
But I'm sorry, there is an assumption here that the gravity that you are discussing has a dual theory,
right,
which might not be the case.
Right. Well,
It's not. I mean, you don't want to say that any gravity will have a dual theory.
That's what it will say.
In the first slide, I assumed,
I
presented my belief that any consistent theory of quantum gravity should have a holographic interpretation.
Right.
Of course, you can say that.
You can
say that these theories are okay, but doesn't have a holography. In other words, holography is not always true.
That's not. Again, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that not every, even not presumably not every string theory background, which comes from a consistent theory, right, necessarily would have a holographic dual description. Right? And so far, you are linking it to a null energy condition, as we discussed earlier. Okay, this violates. We know it acts in string theory, which violates.
Yeah, you may say that holography is only true when the null energy condition is true, or something like that, or.
Yeah, I don't know. That
you can take various viewpoints, but I like interpretation can be different from various perspective. So let me say a few words about the higher dimensional generalizations and conclude my talk. So again, my discussions to forbid these examples of post condensation or spontaneous Lorentz symmetry breakings does not depend on the dimensionality. So at least Korchinsky theorem is also true in high dimensions. These theories should be forbidden in high dimensions or in the universe. Or you could say that if you could find any experimental evidence for such ghost condensation or Lorentz symmetry violation in the universe based on such actions, and then you may say that the Korchinsky theorem might not be true in high dimensions, or maybe a holography is wrong. And I'm very interested in the generalization of Korchinsky theorem in high dimensions, and it is very interesting to find out what happens in the high dimension from a field theory viewpoint, and also from a gravity viewpoint as well, because, maybe non-energy condition affecting non-energy condition might be broken in high dimension, or you could find other examples in high dimensional compactification with quantum fractions, and so on and so on. And, let me finish this talk by comparing my discussions on the Korchinsky theorem and gravitational dual of C theorem. Because at least, I'm not sure what's the situation in high dimension, but at least in one plus one dimension, we know that through the proof of Polchinski or Zamrozhikov, there is a deep relation between the C theorem and Polchinski theorem. So the natural equation is what would be the corresponding statement in high dimension case. And so first of all, I'd like to recall that the proof of C theorem and Polchinski theorem is almost identical in one plus one dimension. Unfortunately, we don't know any proof of the theorem or Polchinski theorem in high dimension, but there might be some relations. And indeed, as I discussed in this talk, in my talk, I emphasized that the gravity dual of Polchinski theorem is pretty much based on the non-energy conditions, and the violation of the Polchinski theorem is also given by the violation of non-energy conditions. So, and non-energy conditions should play an important role. We know that non-energy condition plays an important role in the Polchinski theorem, gravity dual of Polchinski theorem. And actually, it's also true in C theorem. And C theorem, in the derivation of C theorem, and this was discussed by some Friedman and other guys and 10 years ago, and they showed that the gravity counterpart of C theorem based on the null energy conditions. And also they showed this gravity counterpart of C theorem in any dimensions, as long as null energy condition is true. And in my proof or discussion, I assumed one thing about Karlsruhe-Klein vector field. But actually, in the derivation, they are making the same assumptions too. So they are in the derivation of gravitational C theorem, they essentially assume that there will be no contributions from Karlsruhe-Klein vectors. Or in other words, they are studying effective dimensionally reduced version of NHCFT correspondence. So in this sense, my proof is as good as theirs. And in the same regime of validity of argument, these two gravity theorem are related or supported by the null energy conditions on supergravities. But still, this doesn't give you the complete proof in high dimensions, because we know the C theorem, or in general, A theorem, is violated in high dimensions in some very non-trivial constructions on the gate theories. And then there might be a possibility that the scale invariance, equivalence between the scale invariance and conformal invariance might be violated in high dimensions too. And I'd like to find the counterexamples or proof of this kind of statement, because they are very important in my studies and also very important in the study of consistency conditions of the quantum field theories or quantum gravities from this holographic viewpoint. Okay, so let me stop here. Thank you very much.
Any questions from it? Did you already rely on the signs of the coefficients of the next one? Two bad examples. Again, one trivial of A or phi. Some of the signs of the negative, right?
Some of the signs for
the AGM.
Yeah, in order to get a condensation, you need some of the sign should be negative.
Right. Yes.
And that gives you the violation of non energy conditions.
That's why these are. And why isn't that good enough right there? I think that these are sectarians given for violating. We're violating non energy conditions not in a way like an article. Something which is just got a negative.
Yeah, if you expand this theory in the tree, in such a point, then some of the kinetic energy is negative, and also this gives you some non-unitary spectrum.
Right.
And this is what is called ghost here. So the claim is that after some condensation, and then the spectrum could be unitary around some non-trivial configurations. But even though the discussion here is that if you expand these theories around such a non-trivial point, then still it gives you the dual field configurations that violate Polchinski theorem. So I'd like to argue that such theories least inconsistent with holography.
We just depend on the specific modules are. You have a general result, so it doesn't matter what particular theory this.
Actually.
Or do you argue this an argument just case by case?
Okay, so well, we can add additional interactions here, and then the question is that additional interactions would break some of the assumptions or some of the well. So first of all, we can introduce any high derivative corrections depending on f mu nu. But this configuration is zero field strength, f is zero. So the higher derivative corrections coming from this f mu nu doesn't give you any modification on the theory. But if you add additional fields, some kind of scalars or some other stuff, then.
Have you checked Einstein ether theory? That has a vector field that is constrained to be a unit vector field, unit time-like. Seems to
have,
for some values of parameters, it at least has in the linearized approximation positive energy.
Mm-hmm. I didn't study that examples, but my impression that, such theories are, these theories are sick because it violates null energy conditions, and if you such theories does not have such pathologies, and then I think it doesn't give you any inconsistent field configurations like this. I have to say.
Is there kind of a version of the Sposinski theorem where you start with a Galilean binary theory, a scaling barrier?
Oh, interesting question. I thought that's wrong. Again, as you said, Galilean invariant field theories and scaling invariance doesn't necessarily indicate Galilean conformal invariance.
That's another question.
Schrodinger invariance. You need additional some kind of trace identities to show that the theory is not only Galilean scaling invariant, but invariant under the free Schrodinger transformation, or it should contain Schrodinger special conformal invariant transformation. You need some additional assumptions. And the question is whether this could be automatically true as in this Polchinski theorem case. And I tried to give a proof on that, but I haven't succeeded. And then, but at the same time, I don't know any examples violating this equivalence between the two. And I studied several examples of optional expansions of some non-trivial fixed point of these Galilean invariant field theories. But all the examples, in all the examples I have shown, I studied that, it is not automatically clear whether such such Galilean invariant scaling invariant theories should be automatically conformal invariant or Schrodinger invariant. And there is totally not clear whether this should be so. But after computing everything, and then if you study the trace identities, then somehow, sometimes miraculously, every theory I have studied is automatically, some coincidentally or whatever, a Schrodinger invariant. So I believe that such a theory, if you assume Galilean invariance and then scaling invariance, it should suggest Schrodinger invariance, but there is no proof in the field theory side. And maybe you can say the similar statement or similar discussion in the gravity side. I haven't studied.
Any more questions or comments? Okay, let's thank you again then.